Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. How are we? I hope you guys are doing amazing this glorious Tuesday after the long weekend. I hope you guys are well rested, and I hope you had a great time with family and friends and got to hang out and reflect a little bit on this past summer. And I hope that it was a good summer and you got to do a lot of fun stuff, not just work, and be able to really enjoy it and realize how fortunate we are, because as much as we might have hard times or difficulties, if we really reflect, we realize that we might be a lot luckier than we really think we are. I love that song that you just heard. It's Are You Prepared by Silent Bravery. They are a Boston-based group that I'm hoping will get signed soon, because I absolutely love them. I have the pleasure of being a judge at a talent competition with the lead singer, and I hope you guys get to check them out. With that note, I want to reflect and welcome you all here and just let you know that we're very excited about the growth that our show has had in the past year. Shelly Karma Nunchucks is our other hostess that she holds it down on Wednesdays and Sundays, and it's always an entertaining, wonderful time with her. You never know what she's going to bring to the table. She has some amazing guests on her show, as well as just her herself. As most of you know, not only is she an actress and a stunt performer, martial artist as well, but she's also a stand-up comedian, and that's very evident in the way she runs her show. So I hope you guys join her tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for her show, as well as on Sunday afternoons. Miss Shelley holds it down from 12 to 2 Sunday afternoon Eastern Standard Time, and on Wednesdays from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a really great show for you today. We're going to have the ever-talented Jay Walker. He is a poet and an actor, among other things, and I'm looking forward to him calling in a little while, as well as Ahura Z. DeLisa. We've had him in the show before. He is a man of many, many talents, and he's going to discuss some of the projects that he's been working on. Especially, I'm most excited about the fact that he had his first book actually published last year. So we're going to talk a little bit about his book called The Way of the Unicorn. And that's going to be coming up in a little while. In the meantime, we have some emails from some listeners that have asked us some questions and also want to have comments about some of the things that we've had in the past. So I'm going to go to those first before we make some announcements. Last week we had the just amazingly talented Julie Kinchek. I love her. I cannot believe it's been a week since we had her, but I absolutely love her, her talent, her vitality. Everything about her is just amazing. So I'm really looking forward to the day that her new album comes out. So that's going to be coming up in a little while. But one of the things that I enjoy talking about her is the positivity that is in her music and the message that it brings to her listeners. And also we had the, I can't even describe her, Darlene Wolf. She was just amazing, most inspirational woman I've ever had the pleasure of meeting and working with. And of course, Tim Ryan, very talented, very creative. And I wanted to reflect a little bit on that, because for most of us that have kids or grandkids, it's back to school time. And for me, back to school time has always been a time of reflection. My children are long past the age of going back to school. They're all grown. My baby is 21. I know, hard to believe. And instead of going to college, he decided to do culinary school. He graduated last year, and he's out in the real world working. So I want to bring back to you guys, we have this thing on our show for some of you that are new. It's Thoughtful Tuesday. Thoughtful Tuesday for me is a time to reflect and offer you an inspirational message to bring out throughout the week. And I like to give it at the beginning, because a lot of times if I leave it to the end, which would be great because then you guys would remember it and be excited about it, doesn't always happen because we do have some really talented, amazing guests and it always seems like we run out of time. So I've decided to do it at the beginning of the show. So one of the things that I reflected on is what every parent does. If you have children, you reflect on the passage of time. We get caught up in our day-to-day things that we have. Okay, we have school vacation, and then we rush through that because parents are working, and they still have other things to do on top of the fact that their kids are out of school. So we try to squeeze vacations in there or day trips or whatever, and then there's that collective sigh of relief. Oh, the kids are back in school. We're back into our routine. But somewhere in there, we lose sight of the fact that these kids are slowly going from babies to toddlers to kids to adolescents to teenagers and then to adults. So there's always a melancholy feeling for me especially, and I always get kind of choked up thinking about it. I remember every time one of our kids went into high school as a freshman, I would say to them, take these next 4 years, embrace them. Take every second, enjoy it, because it's going to fly by. When you're a freshman in high school, you don't really believe that. You're like, yeah, right, you know, the last 8 years, right? And every single one of my kids has come to me as a senior, either on graduation day or shortly after, and said, wow, you guys weren't kidding. It flew by. So today, my oldest grandson, who turned 5 in May, had his first full day of school. He's in kindergarten. He's going to be in school full time. And there was a very melancholy feeling for me because it's my second time around, in the sense of I remember when it was his dad that I dropped off to school, shy little look, a little apprehensive. And today it was my grandson. So again, the passage of time hasn't slowed down in theory. But as a grandparent, I think I've had the opportunity to reflect back and kind of enjoy it a little bit more because I know firsthand how quickly it goes by. And for me, these last 5 years of having my grandson in our life, especially because he was the first and we were so excited, and he was the first boy on my daughter-in-law's side, and he was the first grandchild, period, on our side. We were just so excited, and we just embraced every second of it. So to see him walking off into school, and I know that once he's in school full-time, it's the real world. He's going to continue to grow. Time will continue to pass. Kindergarten will turn into first, and so on. Next thing you know, it's middle school, high school, college. The time will not stop. The difference for me is the fact that I can reflect on it, enjoy it more, slow down. I don't have to say to him, hurry up, because that microsecond that he might go a little faster is really not going to make that much of a difference in the real world. It's not. I've learned to smell the flowers. They love for me to take pictures because their mama was a photographer. And we take pictures of all the flowers and of the birds and anything that they ask me to. And in doing so, it causes me to slow down and really enjoy life more on their level. So my message for everybody that's listening today is slow it down. I know we hear that all the time, slow down and smell the flowers. It's beyond that. It's about taking the very small wonders, the very miracle that life itself is, and take it in, even the bad times, because as most of you know, our regular listeners know, our family lost our beloved Sarah, my daughter-in-law, last year. She went through cancer for almost 3 years before she passed. There was a lot of really bad things that went on. And for us, watching her being sick, and then when she passed away, we as a collective family could have sat there and hated God, hated the world, hated everything, because this is this amazing woman who was only 32 years old, had so much to offer the world, so much talent and beauty and patience, and she's gone. So we could have sat there and said, well, you know, life really stinks. This person is horrid and they're still alive, or why did this happen to us? But you know what? Me personally, I went through all those emotions privately because it's normal. And I would be lying if I said I didn't. But one of the things that I wanted to do, because Sarah asked me to, was to live life for her. And if I continued to be bitter and angry, I would cheapen her memory and I would basically be throwing away my life, a life that she would have done anything to have, and would be doing a disservice to her. So one of the things that came out of her passing is the fact that I've really learned to embrace every aspect of life, the good, the bad, and the indifferent. And I embrace the bad because when Sarah died, and in the year and few months that have happened, some things have happened that are good. If Sarah hadn't passed away from cancer, I would have never met Darlene Loof, which we had on the show last week. I would have never, my family would have never started the Sarah Joy Foundation. We would have never thought outside of ourselves. Our family as a unit were close, but not that close. Because, you know, people get older and they start moving away and all that starts happening. So we kind of started drifting. And one of the things that I notice now is that as scattered as we are and as drifted as it might seem, there's this collective incredible thing that happens when we're all in the same room under the same roof, that things just pick up where they were. And there's this sense of appreciation. There's this sense of realizing how blessed we are and how lucky, at least for myself. So I've kind of gotten to the point where if I get out of bed and my leg hurts or my butt hurts or I have a headache, it's kind of like, thank you, God, I can feel that. I'm not in a wheelchair. If I have a headache, I'm like, thank you, Lord, I know it's just a tension headache or a migraine or I'm dehydrated. And thank you, Lord, for the advances in medicine that I can take a couple of pills and it will go away. For some people, it will never go away. Some people will never experience that because they're no longer with us. So what I really want to leave you guys with is this: really seriously grasp everything that comes your way, because no matter how horrific or how bad it might seem, if we look, there will always be something positive that will come out of it. The only thing that will not be positive is we continue to dwell on the negative that happened and forget to look to see what the outcome was. Remember, if you ever cleaned out a garage or you ever cleaned out a closet, there's this disaster that happens. And if all we see is the disaster, we miss what we've done. We've cleaned out the clutter. We've taken clothes that were otherwise being wasted that are going to go to charity now. We've made space for new things in our life or in our closet or in our garage, to go with the analogy. So that's what you guys, I encourage you to do that, to take whatever negative things have happened in your life, put the bitterness aside, put the anger aside, and try to figure out what the good that came out of it. If you lost a loved one, think about how you can honor their memory. If you're separated from a loved one, whether it's through your action of yours or action of someone else, think of ways that you can get closer to them, that you can honor their memory, even if it's just the way you live your life. You might think that they don't know it or they don't see it, but trust me, they do. They totally do. And they will always appreciate the fact that you're doing that for them. So my thought for you on Thoughtful Tuesday, as dragged out as it might seem, is seize the day, seize the moment, seize the second, because not to be negative, but you never know when it's going to be your last. So make it count. Make it worthwhile. I have this thing that I told my family that when I pass away, I want my eulogy or my obituary to say that I ran through life, and as I was breathing my last breath, I slid sideways into my grave and say, wow, that was a hell of a ride, because that's the way we should all go out. So I'm going to leave you guys with that, and I hope that it does something to make you realize that life can really be wonderful. And let's just not focus on the negatives. I know there's a lot of stuff going on. There's the economy and Syria and, you know, people getting hurt and all these other things, but that's like less than 5% of the world. There's the 95% that's beautiful. There's the people that sacrifice. There's the kid that went into a store and the owner wasn't there and still paid. There's the homeless guy that helps someone else more homeless or more destitute than him. So there's always a pay it forward out there if we just look for it. So that's what I want to leave you guys with. And I'm really excited to welcome our guest. Our first guest this hour is the amazing Jay Walker. And I have been dying to interview this man for so long. I'm really glad that I finally got him. So we're going to welcome him onto the show. Jay, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hallelujah. I am so glad to finally get you on my show. My goodness, you are so difficult to get a hold of.
Really?
You are. You totally are. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Jay, I am just mesmerized by you and the things that you've done. And so I want to give our listeners a little bit of a background. So I know you're a poet. That's one of your things. You actually published a book. Can you tell us a little bit about when you started writing, how you got into it, and that kind of thing?
Well, my first love, of course, has always been acting. And when I was in junior high school, they introduced me to Shakespeare. And I just absolutely fell in love with Shakespeare. I was one of those weird kids who just totally understood it right from the bat. Like, oh, that's what he's trying to say. And so I just really got into the language of it. And when I got into high school, that's when I started writing what would be called free verse poetry. I started being introduced into the transcendentalists and the beat poets and all of that, and I just ate it up, and so I just started writing my own free verse poetry. And then when I got to college, I discovered something called slam, and that totally blew my mind. And slam is basically performance poetry competition. You would write a poem as if you're going to perform it. You would perform it as if you're still experiencing those emotions you've put forth. You've got 3 minutes to perform the piece, and then judges score you 0.0 to 10.0 based on what they think about your poem. I felt like that was right up my alley, so I just started writing and writing and writing and writing, and it just didn't stop. And the people that I met and the poems that I heard and the books that I read, it just completely opened my mind up, and I got to think of different kinds of imagery, different kinds of poetic tools, and I just eventually amassed enough for a book. And I just went through the process of looking for a publisher. I found an online publisher, not quite one of those Ex Libris Lulu kind of things, not like that.
right.
As close as you can get to that while still being published by somebody else. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
and that
one
was
of the things
the whole process.
Now, my whole
one
thing is that poetry is something so different. I mean, I almost feel sometimes like it's a dying art form, because I was one of those kids. I wasn't as into it as you, but I think I was like in seventh grade when our English teacher, who was one of those amazing teachers that could open a kid's mind, and I went to a school system where it wasn't the best environment to learn. It was, you know, inner city, not your best neighborhood kind of thing. But he had a way of making you love the written word. So he kind of got me into poetry. And I remember he was one of these teachers that if you wrote something, you could actually bring it to him and he'd give you constructive criticism. So kind of understand a little bit about what you're talking about that you got into it. But you're talking about middle school. How do you think it was that you were able to say something as complex as Shakespeare and sit there and go, oh, I get it. I know exactly what this man's trying to say.
My mind has always worked in that kind of way. It kind of separated me from the rest of the class first. I was definitely not a popular kid until I got into high school. But you know, my mind just worked that way, where I was always thinking, I guess the term is outside the box. So it just how I've always been.
Now, you said you weren't a popular kid till you got into high school. Did you have encouragement, like, from your parents, or were you in an environment where you could actually take this passion that you discovered for writing and just go with it? Or is that something that you yourself cultivated?
That's a good question. I was never discouraged, but I was always encouraged to have a backup plan.
Yeah.
And I went through a better school system, I would say, where the quality of the lessons were better, the quality of the teachers were better, but it still wasn't the kind of thing where people were going, wow, you could be a professional actor, you could be a professional writer, you could be a professional whatever. I've always been an artist ever since, as literally as long as I can remember. All I've wanted to do is make and present different kinds of art, performing art, literary art, just art. And so it's always been ingrained in me. So I think I was just pre-programmed to take to the real arts at a really early age.
So you obviously, I know your first love is acting. How old were you when you got into acting, and how did you come into that and to discover that passion you had for it?
Well, like I said, it literally, as long as I can remember, I was Hansel in the kindergarten production of Hansel and Gretel, which, you know, was interesting because as a Cape Verdean man, here I am out in this, well, Cape Verdean boy, because I was, what, five at the time. I was pretty dark skin compared to the rest. I'm not even the darkest skin Cape Verdean that is out there. So, but compared to all the other kids, I was pretty dark, and yet here I was the lead in the play about these two little lost German kids. But
that's awesome.
You know, ever since that moment in time, I'm like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that for a lot of people, people that have never worked in the industry, you know, they have this perception that it's this glamorous lifestyle and, you know, you get all this money and you get all these roles, but you and I know the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, How do you stay motivated to continue in this? Because it is grueling. It's grueling in the sense that I personally don't find it grueling because I like it. But I'm not going to lie. Auditions and traveling long distances and then constantly being say, oh, yeah, you got the part, but we're not going to pay you. And you have to bring your own lunch. You know, it's like no one would ever think to tell a plumber that, oh, yeah, you can fix my toilet, but I'm not going to pay you and you have to bring your own lunch while you fix my toilet. Leave me lunch.
Right.
What do you think keeps you motivated? What do you think is the reason that you continue to do what you do and feel the way you do about it?
Because it's not just what I do, honestly. I mean, there are people out there who do art as a hobby. There are people who do it as a job. There are people who do it as a career. But then there are people for whom being an artist is a piece of their identity. If you take their art away, they lose sense of who they are. And I'm one of those people. I could not stop acting, stop writing poetry and screenplays and short stories. I could not stop singing and writing music. I could not stop doing all the different things that I do, because if I did, I would lose what little is left of my mind.
Right. Now, I have
that's my motivation.
Exactly, because that's another thing that people don't understand. Artistic people, they think it's something we do. It's not something we do. It's who we are. And I think that's very difficult for people to understand, because I know, even for me, because I came to it a lot later than you, because my family never even acknowledged a backup plan. They were like, no, you need to get a real job. And I've shared that with my listeners, where it wasn't about, oh, yeah, you can do that, but no, it's a matter of acting. No, you need to get something that's going to put food on the table. So it was never really encouraged at all. It was kind of like even school was something that, yeah, go to school, but, hey, if you can get a job that pays bills and you can work 40 hours, go for that. So one of the things that people don't understand, it's that it's not that, oh, are you still doing that thing? It's not that thing. It's who I am. So I wanna ask you, when you discovered slam poetry, because I love slam poetry. I've seen some amazing young people. I've worked with the Martin Luther King Scholars. They have a summer program, and I had the amazing honor of being a volunteer with them last year, and it just blew my mind. I want to ask you, what exactly did you feel at that moment where you sat there and go, oh, my Lord, I think my two loves just met and had a baby?
I'm not exactly sure as to the exact moment. I just know that when I discovered the concept, I was like, this is brilliant. This is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. I'm supposed to be doing with my life. I'm being from Providence, Rhode Island. We've got a very strong slam team. They'd actually won the national championships in, it was either 92 or 96. I can't remember which one. But there's a movie, there's a documentary called Slam Nation, and that documents the Providence win. It wasn't supposed to document the Providence win because the guy was from New York and he was following the New Eurekan Poets Cafe team. They were the favorite to win, but Providence won. So, yeah.
That is amazing.
those are the people that I was from whom I was learning, the Reverend Bill McMillans and Taylor Molly's and Sean Shays and the people like that. The people you see in that movie are the people from whom I was learning the craft of slam. There's the art of poetry, and then there's the craft of slam.
Now, for some of our listeners that don't understand it or have never experienced it, I'm going to ask you a question. How difficult is it to go out there, basically, because you're basically bearing your soul to people? I mean, it's so much more different than in acting. You're putting your neck out there because you're putting your talent as an actor on showcase. But it's usually someone else's work, or it's, you know, someone else's screenplay or film or whatever. But in slam poetry and poetry in general, it's usually your work. It's something that you wrote. And as a writer, I know that everything we write comes from a personal experience. It comes from somewhere deep within us. So now you're up there and you're taking this very personal piece of literature that you created, and then now you're putting all the emotions that were going through you at the time that you wrote it, and now you're just going, whoa, here I am, raw for the world to see. How difficult is it to do that? And honestly, why would you want to do that for our listeners to understand the process that goes behind that?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And I don't think any of us who do slam ever stop asking ourselves that question. Because you are, you know, you're getting up there and you're performing it like it's the most important theatrical monologue of your life. You're putting all this emotion into it, but it's also reading your own personal diary or journal or whatever, and displaying all the emotions of these either joyful, sensual, heartbreaking, furious times in your life, and just expose. There's nothing more naked than getting up there and bearing your soul and putting every ounce of that emotion in there. I don't know why, honestly. I don't know why we get up there and do it. It's part group therapy. It's part exhibitionism. It's
It is because it blows my mind. Like, I know, okay, writing in a diary is therapeutic for me, and writing in general is therapeutic for me, and blogging can be therapeutic, and that's a little bit exposing yourself because you're writing personal things to have other people read it, but I don't see them when they're reading it. I don't see their reaction, and if they write anything negative in the little comments, I can always delete it. on you know, and like, oh, I'm not reading that. But it really takes a courageous person to see that. And my whole thing is that I've noticed that the strongest people in that art form, and this is going to be a testament to you, are the people that sometimes themselves think they're not that strong, but yet they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, I can see where that happens.
Right, because I've seen, you know, you yourself, you know, I've seen you struggle, and then there's that, okay, should I do this, should I not do that, get a real job, not get a real job, all this stuff is going on, but you still have the courage to continuously come back to offer more of your very personal life and put it out there in an art form. Do you ever feel that by doing that, you are reaching out to someone that might be struggling, or you might be an inspiration to someone that might need it, or just sometimes even like a life rope, someone that otherwise wouldn't have that?
That's half the reason why I do it right there. And I have had people come up to me and tell me I achieved that goal. So, I mean, honestly, there's the whole point of not just this art form, but any art form, is to express oneself and to reach out to others and evoke some kind of response and have some sort of connection. Any time we leave our house, whether we're artists or not, we're looking for a connection to something or someone, and that's what this is about, to connect with somebody. Mm-hmm. If your poem is using all the different poetic devices that you can think of, the onomatopoeia and alliteration and rhyming and structure and all of that, but it's not connecting with anybody, you're not going to do well. Whereas if you're a little floppy and you're more spoken word than poetry, but you're connecting on a certain level, you're going to do well. And then if you can do both, if you can work the imagery and the tools in there with the connection and the power and the emotion, then those are the people who win.
Right. Now, what exactly, for people that might not understand, when you are referred to or known as a spoken word artist, what exactly does that mean?
Well, a spoken word artist is somebody who, how do I explain this? It's somebody who turns monologues into an art form. It can be poetic.
Mm-hmm.
Most spoken word artists these days prefer to be called performance poets because they really want their work to be considered poetry. And it's just that
mm-hmm.
it's poetry that can be performed on the stage. But there will be
right.
a piece or even a person who writes a series of pieces that don't have the poetic structure, don't have the poetic devices in them. And that is the difference between something being a poem and something being more of a spoken word piece. Henry Rollins did a lot of spoken word, whereas Maya Angelou does a lot of poetry. But
right.
they're both amazing to hear and watch perform.
Now, they're very great examples. And one of the things that you mentioned, and I want to touch a little bit on that, is what exactly is the difference between spoken poetry or spoken word and a monologue when you're performing it in front of people?
Well, a monologue is usually taken from some larger work, a play or a movie, and it could
mm-hmm.
be poetry. It might not be poetry. The difference between spoken word and poetry is just, does the piece use the poetic devices? And then the difference between one of those things and a monologue is it taken from a larger work? That's really the only difference.
Mm-hmm. But actually, as far as how it's performed, is there any difference as far as the emotional level or any of that? Or it's just because of the fact that you said because it comes from a bigger work as opposed to something that was written to stand on its own?
If you're good at what you do, there should be no difference in the amount of emotion you put into the piece.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a cool question because you talked about how you got into poetry in middle school and beyond. Now, you yourself just talked about how Rhode Island is very well known for its spoken word and spoken word artist or spoken poet or poets in general. Yet I back in, I think it was 2010, you were part of the lineup that was put on by the Providence Phoenix, and they presented Art Mingling program.
Yes.
And
I
you
do
were
remember
featured
that.
With yeah, you were featured with I think five other people, and
mm-hmm.
you were specifically mentioned as great local spoken word artists and were singled out because of that. How do you wind up going from someone that heard Shakespeare in middle school and go, oh, wow, that guy's cool, I get it, to actually being recognized for what you're doing and put among some pretty good company from the people that were there that night?
Oh, some excellent company from the people that were there that night. Tristan,
mm-hmm. I know Christopher Johnson was one of them, and Pat Rossi
what?
Was another one. And,
yeah,
of course,
Chris Johnson's
yourself.
One of the best.
Mm-hmm. So
right.
how do you
and,
wind up going, you know, because that's the big leagues right there. When you're put in that group and you're there to hold your own, you're not opening for anybody or you're not, like, you know, the backup. Or you are in that class yourself. So how do you wind up going from, like I said, from where you discover that this is a passion for you to being in that elite class?
Well, there is an old joke. Guy walking down New York stops this in front of this violin player, says, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? The violin player says, you don't know the punchline? Practice.
A lot of practice.
Yes, that's the thing. You just, if it's your passion, then it's going to come naturally to you. And if it's work, then keep working it. Because if you're passionate about it, then eventually you're going to get it. It's just you
mm-hmm.
have to you have to put everything you are into the pieces that you're doing, whether it's poetry or music or a painting or a screenplay or whatever. You have to put every ounce of who you are into it, and that is going to make you better. And you have to open yourself up to others, hear different styles, see different styles, to try different things, experiment. Always be a student. That's the key to not just art, but life in general, is to always be open, always be a student. And you absorb stuff, and that changes you. You can't help but be changed. You're changing every single second of every minute of every day. And
right.
Hopefully, if you've got that mind open enough, you're changing in the right direction. You're growing. And that's just how it is. I didn't choose to be in that upper echelon of people in the Providence poetry and spoken word scene. I chose to be the best I could be, and that wound up being considered one of the best in that area.
Right, and the thing is that a lot of people that aren't into it or don't understand it, or, you know, it's like anything else, it's an art form, and if you don't go to the opera, you don't know who the opera singers are, you don't know who the main people are, you wouldn't know, Andrea Bocelli if you walked down the street at you, and you'd be like, oh, who's that dude? You don't know. But you go beyond just Rhode Island. I mean, you're known. And one of the things that I've always loved about you is that you are just so low-key about it. It's like if average people, I say average because it's like I said, it's like anything else. If you're not into ballet, you don't know about prima ballerinas and like I was saying about opera. But you are very well-known in those circles. You are very well-known to be one of the best around. How do you stay so grounded?
I make it all about the art. It's not about being the best. It's about serving the story. I mean, that just like with any other kind of project you're working on, because I don't just work on the poetry. I work on music. I work on movies. I work on a lot of different things. And it's always about there's a story being told, and the story is not serving you. You are serving the story. And that's just what I keep in mind. And if somebody wants to say, hey, you're awesome, it's just saying thank you very much. I put everything I am into it. Hopefully I'm glad you enjoy it, and just leaving it at that.
That is just so deep what you just said, because even for me, it's just like, wow, it's one of these moments where you're like, wow, I had never thought of it that way. You're saying you are serving the story, and there's just so many times in life, especially as an artist, where you're trying to bend that story to you. You're going to make that bad boy work for you no matter what. It never occurred to me or even to other people, which is probably what separates the greats from the not-so-greats or the averages, that it never occurred that we are the servant of the story, not the other way around. How did you come to that conclusion? What was it about life experiences that made you realize that?
I don't remember. I remember hearing it from somewhere, but I don't remember where I heard it from. And it just really resonated with me and helped me focus my energies into where the work belonged.
Right. And, you know, it's just so, I don't know, to me, you might not realize it, but you just totally sent me to another level, because it just put into perspective some of the frustrations that I might have felt as an actress or as a writer, because I see now where a lot of times I have been trying to say, well, this is my personality, this is who I am, so this bad boy's gonna fit me. As opposed to going outside of my comfort zone and saying, there's so much more that I could possibly do if I realize that I'm the one serving this storyline or this part. And it just blows my mind that something so simple could really change someone's perspective so much, and for you to be at that level. For the people in the chat room, we are talking to Jay Walker, poet, extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. He's a spoken artist and well-known in the Rhode Island area and among the spoken word circles. He's also an actor. Jay, I'm going to take a little bit of a music break, but only because I want you, maybe do you think we can get you to share one of your poems with us when we come back?
Oh, sure. I'll see if I can dig one out of my brain somehow.
Sounds good. So we're going to go to, we're going to play one of the songs from our guest that's going to be coming up. This is called Athenas, and this is by Pisces Project, and it's called Planets, and this is by Ahurzi and the Pisces Project. And welcome back. That was the Pisces Project with their song Planets. Love that song. It's just so mellow and just so beautiful. So we are here with the amazing Jay Walker, and we're going to have him come back. And I am just so excited to have him on the show and get to talk to him a little bit about his amazing career and what he's done in the field of spoken art. Jay, welcome back.
Yeah. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, I hate to put you on the spot, but I've been dying to hear you perform, so I was hoping that you could share a poem with us.
Most definitely. I'm just looking for a place that isn't quite as populated as the place where I was, and I'll explain why. I'm gonna put my phone on speaker. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good, because I want to put the phone down as much as possible so I can put as much performance into the piece as possible.
Amazing.
Here we go. This is nice and secluded. All right. This piece is actually in my first book called Sifting Through the Ashes of Me. And the piece is titled The Not Another Revolution Poem.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get one thing straight right from the start. I am not going to do another revolution poem. I am not about jumping on the bandwagon to the next battlefield to fight alongside mere babes who eat their own bunk until their bellies are full and then fling it at the walls until they're bored. I am not going to do another revolution poem. I do not want to be crowded into this herd of sheeple bleating the word like a mantra, beating the word, the concept into the ground, the world into submission. I am not
going to do another revolution poem. I do not want to be grouped with this latest wave of revolutionaries who don't even know why they're fighting, don't even know who came before them, don't even know what poem they're sampling. I am not going to do another revolution poem. The revolution has been televised and commercialized and popularized. The revolution has been pasteurized, homogenized, immunized, and otherwise sterilized. The revolution has been plagiarized, monopolized, standardized. The revolution has been demonized, bastardized, philosophized. The revolution has been canceled due to lack of enrollment. The revolution has been. It happened. Where you been, man? I'm not going to do another revolution poem because I do not want to be part of another revolution. I do not want to be treated like an animal and left lurking in the windows watching pigs cavort with humans not being able to tell between them. I do not want to be part of another movement which only serves to bring me right back to where we started. You see, we evolved into systems that weren't working. So we changed them into systems that weren't working. So we revolted, replacing them with systems that weren't working. So we developed them into systems that weren't working. It spins me so dizzy, I'm sick to my stomach. Sick of democracies and aristocracies full of fallacies and hypocrisy. Sick of the next capitalism, communism, socialism, feudalism, schism to come around. Sick of the sickness not inherent in the systems, but in the people using them. The systems are flawed because people are flawed, are filled with self-serving, materialistic ideals that just aren't working. We don't need another movement for revolution. We need to move and be moved to real change. That starts from within each and every single one of us, and I'm starting with me.
Wow. That was amazing. Oh, my
Thank
God.
You.
I love that. Oh, man. You just said a mouthful. Canceled due to low enrollment. I love I had to keep from laughing because I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh,
that
don't.
Is amazing, Jay.
Don't keep from laughing. That's part of the reason why we do it, is for the reaction.
I know, but I didn't want to interrupt you. I love that. Oh, man, that is so deep, but in such a great way that, wow, I'm going to have to listen to that like another 20 times to get all of it because there was just so much in there in such a great way.
Thank you.
Wow. For our listeners, that was Jay Walker. And what was the name of the piece you just gave us?
That's called The Not Another Revolution Poem in the book, Sifting Through the Ashes of Me. Yes.
And what was the name of the book again?
Sifting Through the Ashes of Me.
That is great. And you can just tell how personal what your work is about. That it's just, I don't know, that I'm, it's like going back and again, as you can tell, I'm a little speechless here because it's just, I mean, I knew you were good, but wow, damn, that was awesome.
Thank you.
Consider my socks officially blown away.
I appreciate it.
I'm just blown away. Jay, for our listeners, I cannot believe, I even purposely saved the whole hour for you and it just flew by. I want to ask you, you're no longer in Rhode Island. Where are you? What are you up to? And what can we hope to see from you in the future?
Well, I am in Los Angeles County, California, and
mm-hmm.
I am putting together a couple of crowdfunding campaigns, one to get my production company off the ground and another mm-hmm. to work on our first project, which is going to be a short film. I actually was nominated, did not win. I lost to a very, very good person to lose to, but a short film that I had already adapted, directed, produced, and assistant edited was nominated for Best Short Film in Rhode Island for 2013. And so I'm working on another short film.
What film was that?
It was called Whose Cafe?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I
based
know what you said.
On what's that?
I said I've heard of it. I did not realize that was you. I should have known better.
Yes, I am. I am Jay Bird Street Productions, And I actually got the idea from a friend of mine. Like I said, I adapted the script from a sketch that he wrote. He's got this great gift for taking other people's work and putting it in a different setting. He wrote this great sequel to a Shakespeare play, and the way he used the language, I've never seen anybody modern day work Shakespeare language like he does. He did that with something else. He did it with the most classic, one of the best vaudeville comedy routines of all time, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello's Who's On First.
Oh, really?
He applied it to a coffee house, to a new hire at a coffee house, and he called the sketch What's the Coffee of the Day? And so I took that, I added a beginning, I added an end, I tweaked like maybe one or two words in the middle. It didn't really need much tweaking at all. And so that wound up being selected for the Steen Film Music and Art Festival this past April, and then also got nominated for that award. So I'm just continuing to work on that project and other project. The project I'm going to work on after the short film is a way to bring the poetry back into it along with music, because I've been writing music as well.
Right, right. So if our listeners want to get more information on you or keep up with what you're going to be doing, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Right now, the best way is on my Facebook like page. It's facebook.com/JAY Walker on FB.
Okay. So they can reach you that way. And I want to know, where can we get your book?
Well, the first book, Sifting Through the Ashes of Me, is available at publishamerica.net, but not for very long. They have only a few copies left. They no longer have the rights to publish any more of the books. I'm talking to the people who have published my other two books to release a fifth anniversary edition sometime before the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
My other two books are available at the Merry Blacksmith Press, and that's merryblacksmith.com.
Merry Blacksmith. .com. So for our listeners, that is up on our chat room, and I will be putting that up later on the webpage and on the segment. Jay, I have got to have you back on the show in the next few months to find out what's going on. And like I said, I mean, I knew you were good, dude, but wow, that, and I'm not easily impressed. You know me, I've been around the block quite a few times, and you know how much talent there is in our area, and I've been involved in the music and the acting and all of it for a long time, not as a performer at the beginning, but, you know, just as a promoter and all that. But, I mean, honestly, wow, dude. And I'm like, I just put you on the spot, and you're doing it over a phone, and I cannot even imagine the quality, you know, as great as it was just now, never mind when you're on a stage and prepared. I am just so impressed, and I can understand now why you are definitely in that elite circle, because you are very talented, and you have definitely have, you're serving the story, dude. You definitely are not holding back. I'm very impressed, and I'm very happy that I finally got you on the show. Do you have anybody you'd like to say, hey, what's up to before you go?
Well, I want to say, hey, what's up to all my Isis Storm sisters. Don't know if you know this about me. I'm the only man welcome into Isis Storm, which is a women's artist collective promoting women's art and women's issues. And
that's awesome.
I would also like to send a shout out to my wonderful 11-and-a-half-year-old son, Luke Sky.
That's awesome. I've heard so much about your son. He just seems like a treasure. He seems like just an amazing person and a grounding source for you. I'm so glad that you have him in your life. And that you're there for him as well.
I try to be from 3,000 miles away. It's hard, but I do my best.
You know what, Jay? I have a feeling that you do better 3,000 miles away than some people do right next door. I really do. You seem like that kind of, I just get that vibe that you give it your all, and you're about the quality, not the quantity. So, Jay, thank you so much for being on a show. You do not know how honored I am and how happy I am to finally get you, because This is one of my passions as an observer. I don't think I'd ever have the courage to do what you do, but I just love how you breathe life into these amazing personal stories and just make them so entertaining and so wonderful to share with people. So to our listeners, you can find Jay on Facebook, or you can go to maryblacksmith.com to find his books, as well as Publish America until the last few copies are gone. And we're definitely going to have Jay back, because I know he's up to some pretty cool things. I know he's got the works going on out there in California. So, Jay, thank you so much for being with us, and I look so forward to having you in the future.
Oh, I look forward to being had in the future. Wait, that's my .
I
look forward to being on your show again.
Thank you so much, Jay. God bless you. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
See, that's one of the reasons why I absolutely love doing this show, and I just feel so blessed every day that I actually get to do it, because every time I get to talk to one of my guests, it just motivates me and pumps me up, and I am in awe of the talent that's out there. That's one of the reasons that I originally started the show back in 2009, because for some of our newer listeners, and to our listeners in the chat room, I apologize, some glitches going on. I know most of you aren't showing up on the chat, but I can see you. I know you're all there, so we'll figure out what's going on. It's been glitchy lately for the last couple of shows, but you are there, so if you make a comment, I will see it, and I will definitely answer. I can see some of you I know some of you can see each other on the chat room, but I can see the rest of you. So if you're in there and you don't see your name, don't worry, I can see you. I know you're there. But anyway, the reason I started this show originally back in 2009 was because it just blew me away that I had started working as a community organizer a million years ago with the city of Lowell back in Massachusetts. And I just kept seeing this talent coming at me. I mean, there was poets and writers and filmmakers and singers and dancers and producers and, I mean, musicians. It's just nonstop. And when I mean dancers, I'm talking about art forms that from different countries, different dance forms, and the same thing with the singing, different languages, different genres. And it was like, it just blew my mind. I'm like, why is there all this amazing talent, yet no one knows about it? I felt that Lowell was like this mecca, this rich mecca of talent that wasn't being exposed. And the more I traveled to Boston and Rhode Island and New Hampshire and Maine, hey, shout out to everybody over at Unicorn Cove. Hi, guys. I know you're in there. And Kazi, I know you're in there, too. So I'm saying hi to everybody out there, and Sonari and whoever else happens to be listening in Maine. I just was blown away with the talent, artists as well as painters and sculptors and jewelry makers and all these people that weren't being exposed. So I felt like I wanted to be able to get it out there, to expose it a little bit more, and hope that people realize that, you know, nowadays, it's not to put down the music industry, because I'm not, but honestly, I don't even listen to the radio anymore, and I know it sounds, it's really sad, because it's just like, I don't know, music nowadays just sounds so prefabricated and recycled, and not even in a good way, and it's dumbed down sometimes, and I don't feel the artistic value to a lot of it, where I get these bunch of CDs for independent artists, like we had, you know, Irving Evans on the show, and we have, you know, my kids, I love them. I love the songs that they've done. You know, we have Cardiac Sacrifice and Situ and Santos, and then we have, you know, we have Tragic and Lyrical and all these other people that, you know, Surefire Studios, and then we have Pisces Project and Ahura and, you know, all these amazing, talented people like Sonari that I'm like, hey, these are the people we should be listening to, because this is a true art form. It's different. It's amazing. It's entertaining. And that's where I really wanted to be able to share that with people. So that's why I've been doing it. And, you know, I just want to be able to continue to do that. And I really appreciate the fact that you guys are always listening and always there for us. And so I have a question here that someone sent me. Well, I'm a little disorganized today. So anyway, I'm going to play a song because I love to play songs. And this one in particular, I haven't played in a while. It's called Change. And Jenna Donovan, I love Jenna. She's another one of the my unofficial daughters. Because I have like 100 million kids. I know most of you probably see that on Facebook. They're like, how many kids do you have? Everybody calls you mom, but I have a lot of them. But Jenna Donovan, she's an amazing singer. She did a lot of choruses for my kids that rapped, and she actually moved from Massachusetts to Nashville. She's out there trying to make it happen, and she's just, every day gets more beautiful and more talented. But this is one of her older songs that she did with My Son Sacrifice, and I want to play it for you because I can. Yay! That's what happens when you run your own radio show. You can play whatever the heck you want. With that said, guys, if you have music that you would like to share, radio friendly, because I want everybody to be able to enjoy it, please email it to me, ordinarywomanwmn@gmail, in MP3 format, MP4. Please send it in. I would love to listen to it. If you've never been on the show before, I would definitely love to have you. So if you're interested in being on the show, send me a bio, picture, and some of the links to your work and to your music. And I don't just do musicians. Everybody know that. I do everybody. If you do something weird and bizarre and amazing, I want you on the show. So definitely hit me up, ordinarywomanwmn@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Facebook, Diamond in the Rough. You can message me there as well. So for enjoyment, Change by Sacrifice with Jenna Donovan.
Trying to do the best I could, doing all the things that they say I should. But I'm in the same old place,
yeah.
Looking for a new life, searching for a change.
Yeah.
Don't look down, gotta keep my head up.
Let's go.
I never liked, so I quickly made it, exit my best as I'm changing flight. I made it bright, my sights an amazing light, so I try to be my finest, my highest, I made it right. I made changes, a stranger to giving life, but a wife and some children can build it and make it right. I'm making nice, two lives, I'm living twice, once was long ago, the other is really nice. I'm searching for a new life, searching for a change, working like a servant for these merchants for a chain. Searching for a purpose for my service in the game, now I circuit for my purpose, never nervous when I play. I get it working, put my word in for my pain. My verbiage keep me surging when I turn it into gain. I'm never turning, only learning when I aim. So I serve it with a purpose, Mr. Perfect, make it rain.
Trying to do the best I could, doing all the things that they say I should. But I'm in the same old place, looking for a new life, searching for a change.
Walked away cause I maxed out. Went to college road, met some dames and blew they back out. School didn't help, I stayed the same, I had to lash out. Teachers telling me keep it moving, dog, this ain't for you. My fam waiting to see if the things I say come true. But truthfully in my heart, your boy just stayed confused. So Brady dropped the beat, now everybody changed their view. But there's no room on this bandwagon, your man's damaged. Less than a quarter mil, I can't have it, I can't stand it. Stay away, I can't manage. This shit bleeds through my veins like guitars from Van Halen. I can't relax, I'm about to put mass back on the map. If you ask some gas, these new rappers is trash. And I ain't saying I'm the best to do it, I'm just saying that my heart's invested in this music.
When I strain, I was trained to never falter, always braver on the range. Overcoming obstacles, hurdling the next. Change of life a crime, using words to be the best. Burning by my courage in the verses that I bless. So it's still a life of crime because I'm murdering this text. Always keep my head up, never looking to the ground. Always looking for a new look, always booking to the sound. Music made me do it, always push it to the clouds. Or the ground that kept me grounded when I pounded on the ground. Leave a vision you never saw. Where a life that you live in is bigger and never flawed. The big picture depicted and made us hard. So Jenna, bring us heaven when you singing for the stars.
Trying to do the best I could, doing all the things that they say I should. But I'm in the same old place, looking for a
looking for a new life, searching for a change.
And that was Change by Jenna Donovan with Sacrifice in Situ. Wow. You know what? As a parent, it's really cool when you get to hear your kids do what they love to do, like music or playing a sport or art. I mean, I love my mom, but good Lord, she was not very supportive in that area. And I could understand why. You know, she grew up during the Great Depression because she was a lot older, you know, than your average parent was. She was in her 40s when she adopted me. So I understand where she was coming from. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to encourage my kids to go after their dreams, desire, because you know what? You have to be true to yourself. And like what Jay was saying is that when you're not doing that you're passionate about, it's like a little part of you, actually a huge part of you. It's not a little part by any means of imagination. It's a huge part of you. It just feels like you're going to go crazy or you're going to lose your sanity or a part of you is going to drift off. This past weekend, I had the great opportunity to work on a film, and we're going to be having the director later on, I'm hoping, on the show, Georgia. Georgia Hilton is this amazing woman. She was in the Navy for years, and she has been in the film industry as a sound expert, mixer, editor. And she wrote a full-length feature film. And you have to understand, if you're familiar with the film industry or if you heard the big hoo-la over Hurt Locker in 2007 or 8 when it got nominated, it was a big deal because it was a woman director, a woman that directed a war movie that wasn't watered down or romanticized or all the stuff that drives me crazy about some women behind the camera or as writers. But anyway, she wrote this amazing script called Subconscious. It's a kind of a thriller sort of thing. Obviously, I can't tell you a lot about it, but they're on Facebook if you look them up, Subconscious. So to see her work and to have the opportunity to work with her was just mind-blowing. I got to work with her on this weekend doing a small scene for her. And it just, you know, it goes back to what you're passionate about. I mean, this woman went, and her crew, because she was surrounded by some of the most amazing crew and actors. She had the amazing Tim Abel. I don't know if you guys remember him a while back. He was on Soldier of Fortune. And he's got a couple of shows on the Outdoor Channel as well. But anyway, so to see these people just work nonstop, 16, 18-hour days, she literally filmed a feature film on a submarine in Fall River at Battleship Cove, if you guys are familiar with that area. She got permission to film there. So she filmed on the submarine and she filmed on the John F. Kennedy. She filmed this movie in 10 days. She got all the props. And I mean, and I'm talking, this is a big deal. I mean, she has, you know, CGI, things that she'd have to incorporate because the movie was based in 1943 and obviously had to get the costumes. She came up with the budget herself. I mean, it was just amazing to see her work her magic. And not only that, she broke the New York City production record of filming more than 20 pages of script in a day. This is huge. You guys don't understand. It's a lot of work, and she managed to do it. And I'm pretty sure she's going to have a really kick-ass project when she's done. So please check them out on Facebook under Subconscious the Movie, and I'm sure when it comes out, you guys are going to be surprised. And the good thing is that all the proceeds are going to go to a project to help veterans that come back from war to be able to make themselves better and to deal with the emotional scars that they go through. With that said, I have to welcome the ever amazing Uhura Zugaliza, who is in the wings, and I'm so excited to have him on the show. Big Z, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. Okay.
It's been forever.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen you in a while, but it's always good to hear
from you. Thank you. I'm like the prodigal daughter, or the prodigal sister. I disappear, and then I come back in the night when you least expect me, and they're like, who's that? Who's that woman? So, Uhura, I have to go into this because I purposely made sure that I only had two guests on the show because I wanted to give you at least a 50-minute block because there's just so much going on. But the one thing that, I mean, everybody knows you as this imposing figure with the dancing and the martial arts and the film and the music, but I really want to talk about your book because it was something that I remember mentioning to you quite a few times. Like, Z, you got to write a book. Z, you got to write a book.
Yeah.
And one thing is for our listeners, for our listeners that don't know you, when you tell Z to do something, trust me, it's going to get done. So he finally got it done. So, Ahura, can you please tell us a little bit about your book? What's it called and what's it about?
Well, the name of the book is The Way of the Unicorn. And the book is a basic introduction to mysticism and what I call unicorn light magic. The reason I call it that particular thing is because you have to have a whole methodology for magic, and that's usually a path or a way. And my way is about dispelling evil, bringing peace to people, making sure that they do the things in their life they really want to do, and showing them that even if no one else supports them, they can support themselves. And
now, I want to back it up a little bit because you mentioned two things that usually people will poo-poo about or will instantly shut it off as, oh, my gosh, that's bad. You talk about mysticism and you talk about magic. So a lot of people, when they hear magic, they think Harry Potter, casting spells. And when they hear mysticism, they think of the, you know, stereotypical gypsy woman with her crystal ball and her cards. Can you please explain a little bit about what you mean when you refer to those two things?
Well, mysticism is uncovering truth, and they're true universal truth. Now, I know that a lot of people have a misconception about magic and mysticism basically because of what they've seen on television. But I'm not a gypsy woman with a crystal ball. I'm a guy, and I'm very much a guy.
Terribly deep voice.
And you know, I shoot straight from the hip. I'm kind of like a farmer, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the most simple things that you can do in life is acquire. The best thing you can do in life is acquire a simplistic way of bringing those things that you need into your life into your life. And what I call mysticism, people can call whatever they want, but the truth is that it is my job to take those things which are intangible, yet part of my spiritual realm or my mental realm, and cause them to be tangible. That is what we call mysticism, which is basically just the art of manifestation. Now, I'm sure that there are a lot of scientists that will say things such as, well, you know, there's no basis in mysticism, but the truth is there's basis every single day in mysticism. You know, no matter what you tell some scientists, they'll say, well, there's no evidence, but hey, you can make up evidence, and we still don't have flying cars. So I guess that both science and mysticism is on the same page. I'm still waiting for a lot of things. You know, where's my lightsaber? You know?
Right.
So you can't really say that. A lot of people like to say, well, magic is just something that's not yet understood or explained by science. But the truth is there's some things that cannot be explained. You know, you accept them. You either accept them or you don't accept them. However, if you take a moment and you say, wait, we don't have any strings on us. There's nothing holding us up. That must be something behind what we like to call science. And even so, to remember that science is the offspring of mysticism. You know, so I just simply call this art of manifestation. And anyone can do it. I don't care who you are, how you are, whatever. There are people that like to say, well, you know, isn't that the law of attraction? No. First off, the law of attraction is flawed.
Okay?
People say those things that you have in life are what you've drawn to you. That's not true. There are people that have worked their whole lives to get one single thing and never realized it. And then there are people that have to do absolutely nothing and realize something. Now, what you have to say is, isn't choice part of all of that? What we like to call free will is just to make a simple choice. But you can choose not to do magic or mysticism, and you can go and choose to do science, and that's just pretty formidable. I know some very, very good scientists. None of them are those that call themselves skeptics, because the I always say it this way. Listen, magic has been around forever. from the very first person that ever took their first breath, magic has been around. Now, the preexistence of something, the preexistence of something basically negates whether or not you believe in it. Okay? Like, we can believe all day that all there is out there is a bunch of gravitational fields, electromagnetism, all those wonderful things that hold all of our planets in place. But don't you think in even the Big Bang Theory, someone had to light the fuse? Someone had to.
Right.
So if I think of it that way, I say, well, then that means that almost anything is impossible. I mean, excuse me, almost anything is possible.
Right.
You know, the improbable might take a little longer, but the impossible happens daily. You get two people that get together, and the result is a child that has been manifested. There's some magic in that, and I don't care what anyone has to say about that. You know, I listen to skeptics all the time, and they try to, as you say, poo-poo magic and mysticism, or try to make it so foreboding. There's nothing foreboding about it. If you understand the laws of nature, if you understand the elements, if you understand the way that the earth itself breathes, then you can tap into those mystic lines. Now, casting spells, that kind of thing, that's great. But remember, mysticism is always practical. In other words, you can sit and do fireballs all day in your hand and think you're so impressive. But if there's no food on your table, it really doesn't matter, does it?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
You know, so this is what...
Now,
so you
obviously have studied this. You understand it. For the rest of us, the average people, we're like, oh, my goodness, what is he talking about? And obviously that's not something that I could do. Now, what exactly is in the book? What does it explain? What are some of the things that average people can walk away with when they read the book?
Well, what they can walk away with is a basic understanding. You'll always hear my voice in my writings. In other words, I teach about the elements. I teach about the dimensions. I teach about you yourself and the bodies that you have. We like to believe all we are is this physical body, but that's not true at all. We're a lot more, and it connects to every single thing that there is. For instance, let's say that there are five different bodies, okay, that we all have, all of us. That would be the physical body. Astral body, etheric body, spirit, and soul. Now, that connects right into the elements. Now, a lot of people like to say, well, there's earth, fire, water, wind, and spirit. But spirit is not an element. Spirit is a principle or love, whatever. Love is a concept. It's not an element at all. However, the most simple element of all of them that pervades through all things, no matter what, in all life, is electricity. And it's funny, no one really gets that. So I teach people about that. I also teach them how every aspect of their life ties into every aspect of this earth and even beyond. Okay? And then we move on to some very simple work and doing things like honoring nature, letting nature know that you're willing to deal with it, that you're willing to be accessible to it and know that it's accessible to you. You see, if you have an agreement with something that is way bigger than you, you probably won't get stepped on. And that's basically what I teach. In this book, I give you some spells, but remember, they're always practical. I give you some warnings against certain pitfalls. I give you very, very positive thought and help you to understand that magic is for everyone, that what we call mysticism is basically for everybody. There are protective spells. There are spells to bring about love for yourself. Now, which brings up a very important point. There are lots of people that go and pay thousands and thousands of dollars for a love spell. Please do not. Do not. The only love spell that you can successfully perform is that which helps you to build love within yourself so that you can attract that thing that has that particular energy for you. You know, you go to many, many psychics, and I know some great psychics, but I know some that I can truly call charlatan, and what they'll do is they'll say, oh, well, you know a person with an R in his name, an R, and that's billions of people. You know, an R, and then the person will say, well, that's, I know someone named Richard, that's it. You know, what a load of malarkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many Richards there are in this whole world?
Right. So for me to try to get a comprehension to our listeners, if magic exists, Okay, so I'm going to step back for people that don't understand it. If magic exists, why is it so underutilized? And why is it that we can't say, okay, well, you know what? I want $100 million because I want to do all these things so I can, you know, throw
a
spell
out
there. Okay,
that's a great point. $100 million? Let me just ask you straightforward. Do you even have the slightest concept of what $100 million looks like?
Yes, I do, because I've dreamt about it.
No, that's a dream.
I'm
talking about in actuality.
In actuality, I know that it would fill half of my room if I had it in $20 bills, and I know it wouldn't fit in any of my suitcases, so I'd have to you know, probably buy a truck to put them in. But so you're saying that for some people, the reason maybe magic isn't an option is because, one, they don't believe in it, or because the stuff they need isn't, they don't see themselves receiving that.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I didn't say that magic isn't an option. It's just you get the wrong idea of what magic actually is. For instance, if I needed to manifest $1,000, and I did a spell to do that, to bring that to myself, I have a reference. I know what $1,000 looks like. I know what it feels like, what it smells like. I have held it. I know all of that. So that's a straight line to not only your sense of creativity, but your sense of practicality. If you have no reference as to what $100 million looks like, that would be absurd to try to do something to manifest that, unless you rob the bank. Okay? But I don't recommend that. But what I'm saying is that you have to start at a level that you have some comprehension at. And this is where people miss the mark all the time. You know, they say, well, you know, I want a big, gigantic house. Well, that's great, but what does that house look like? Is it in perfect condition? What's not working in it? You have to think of all of these things. And if you say, well, I really do need that $1,000, and you do something, and you wait for it, and you have not just faith, but you have hope, and, you know, you love yourself enough to actually go through the steps, then there's a 99.9% chance that almost immediately you will manifest that. Why? You know what that particular money looks like. You know how much you're needing, and you're being very, very specific. Magic doesn't happen just because it's waiting around for you to do a magic trick. You know, that vibration that is manifesting itself takes work. I mean, real work. Think about it. When you wanted a certain type of a job, you had to, one, go out and apply some effort, show your best side. Once you've gotten the job, you have to start doing the training and make sure that you're one of the best representations of yourself that you can be, right? That's what we call simple mysticism. You have to be one-pointed enough to believe in yourself enough that you can manifest this. So magic is always an option.
Okay, so you said that the law of attraction is flawed because of the fact that, you know, you gave the example that some people have worked their whole life.
People have the wrong idea.
Yeah,
they have the wrong idea. I mean, it's like it's flawed because people think, okay, you want to meet someone, right? You say, well, you know, I want my soulmate. When, one, you have no concept of what a soulmate is. Two, you can go see a person. You can see a person that in a supermarket three or four times and think that there's a psychic connection. And believe me, I have heard this many times. There's one supermarket in town. You both go there. Okay? You know, then there's other times where you have no reference as to what a soulmate is, and then someone comes along, and because you hit it off a little bit, you think that that's your soulmate. But you have to remember, there are different types of soulmates. There are companions. There are siblings. There are business partners. There are friendships. There are agreements and alliances. And then you go into the romantic part, which is what we all like to do. The moment that we see someone, you hear the bells, and you go, hey, this must be the person. No, no, no. There's no must be to a soulmate. The moment that you are with that person, it is easy, one. Two, you don't have to ask anyone's advice. So when a person comes to me for a reading and they come to me for anything like that, and believe me, I reference this in the book, and they say, is this my soulmate? Well, I've only got one option of an answer. No, because you asked me. I mean, think about it. If you stop there and you wiggle your left hand, the fingers on your left hand, Do you have to ask me whether or not they're yours?
Right, exactly,
and,
no.
So why should you ask me whether or not something is yours when you know that it is?
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You hear?
So
in other words,
you...
what we've done over the years is we've cultivated a state of insecurity in every one of us. And magic is that one thing that can cause you to be sure. Why? Because only you can do it. Only you can apply yourself. Only you can find a way to reach out to those magnificent powers or whatever you want to call them in the universe and bring them to you so that you can manifest something. And after that point, you have proof, which will give you an idea of the next time you need something.
So where was the point that you decided to write the book, and how did it start out? How did that whole idea come for you to come up with The Way of the Unicorn?
Well, I run a school, and it is called Unicorn Cove. And years ago, I was told by a very powerful message that that's exactly what I am, is a unicorn. Now, true, there's no horn pointing out of my head. I'm not going to transform and go running off into the light. But the truth is the virtues of the unicorn is what I stand for, the dispeller of evil and the very picture of magic and mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my idea of magic is not airy-fairy, because you know me. I'm not an airy-fairy
mm-hmm.
guy. Okay.
Oh, no, no.
But magic is real. So I decided, well, you know, I do so much, and people were asking me constantly, including you, you need to write this stuff down. And I said, well, you know, I would, except for I hate typing. And I can't stand it, you know. But, I mean, I type really good, you know. I'm up to, like, what, 40 words a minute, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, I said, okay, I need to do this because there are a lot of ideas about magic out there that are just bone wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps I can help people to get to a point where they can see it. There are books out there that telling people you must acquire the seven-pointed star of the elves and the sorcerer's stone and this and that and the other. And you know what? I'm about fed up with that crap, you know. People are looking
mm-hmm.
for answers. I once listened to this. I kind of got ambushed by an affiliate of Fox and on a radio show. And there was a,
mm-hmm.
and I have to say the way she says it, licensed psychotherapist. And she said it four times. And finally I just said, okay, well, you said that already. Well, someone called in to ask her for help. This woman offered them nothing, nothing. This is an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
They offered them nothing and told that person, you need to go and search for your higher power. Well, listen, to an alcoholic, right at that particular moment, that higher power is that bottle. You can't just tell them something like that and not give them anything.
Very true.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I told her, I said, you can't just give them platitudes. What do you mean? Well, that's what people are doing with magic. They'll tell the person, listen, for $500, I will perform this spell for you, and I will put a candle on my altar and here's this crystal, and now, go away. I got your $500. I don't want to talk to you for a while, and then when I run out of your $500, I'll contact you again. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's not how it's done. There's no complicated moves to magic. It depends on what type of magic you're studying, and there are thousands. But the best magic is the one that is the most simple, and that is nature magic, which is what I teach in The Way of the Unicorn. The Way of the Unicorn is to find every single way to maintain the peace. Find every single way to maintain beauty, strength, and love and understanding in your life. Find every single way to be that light to a person. Like I hear people say, you know, I want the person of my dreams. But they never really take time to be someone's dream. And that's what I'm trying to teach people in writing this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I have several other books to write. However, like I said, I hate typing. But I'll do it anyway.
It's like, I hate typing. We're going to have to get you like that dragon program or something, because I know there's a lot of great ideas in that head of yours.
Yeah, I'll just have my daughter do it. She types good. You know, I have her do it and like bribe her.
Take a memo. So From everything you've explained to us, I see how you're telling us that magic is really a part of life. We're the ones that have somehow stigmatized it, or for whatever reason, it is part of everything. I mean, it's like, you know, you bring the nature and you bring your elements and everything into you to bring you into balance. And that's something that we've all heard about. I mean, Tai Chi is based on this, and this meditation
that's
is
correct.
Based on this. So why do you think there's such a stigma? I mean, people aren't stigmatized by Tai Chi or meditation. They used to be, obviously, back in the day, but it's been more normal now, seeing more like mainstream. What do you think is that the holdback where people are still so apprehensive, and whenever magic is mentioned or mysticism, there's just that collective sigh or rolling of the eyes,
well,
and there's just that doubt?
Well, you can partially blame scientists for that, or pseudoscientists, I call them. Pure scientists never leave anything out, ever. They consider all options and all things equally. However, there's also the religious faction that have told people that if you have a remarkable gift painting pictures, that that's got to be the devil. Or if you can see things, that's got to be the devil. Or everything is got to be the devil. You know. So what that does is it causes a stigma on words such as mysticism, magic, paranormality, metaphysicians, things like that. And the truth is that magic is like saying, you might as well say metaphysics, or you might as well say paranormality, which is non-exclusive. Remember, metaphysical means physical and beyond, same as paranormal, normal and beyond normal, but not disclusive. In other words, it's all-inclusive. Now, I've spoken to a person that was once in the Atomic Energy Commission. His name was Lawrence McAllister. And he came to see me about my vibrational frequency work because he says, you know, he feels like all of the things that he's seen, I'm above the curve. And I was like, no way. And I had to tell him. I said, listen, nothing against you personally. I can't stand scientists. They're some of the most closest-minded people I've ever met in my life. And he says, no, that's not true. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you are, in fact, a pure scientist. He says, what you don't like is those people that betray the art of science in order to make a buck for themselves. And that's where we agreed. Remember, science is supposed to help discover something. It is supposed to help us enhance ourselves, not close us off to a whole part of ourselves that can save our lives. Remember, it's all the same thing. You know, so I think all of that, plus you got moronic people that go around saying, I'll give you $1 million if you can prove you're psychic. But, you know, you can't prove. There's no way to prove that you're psychic to someone who is not.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. It's kind of silly when they say that.
Yeah, you can't tell a person or describe the color blue to a person or convince them that it exists if they have no eyes. And, you know, I call these people skeptics, and I love them. You know, God bless them. All you have to do is show them once, and they either lose all sense of identity or they just try something else. You know, but I've been challenged by a lot of people, so I put it in writings and tell people, hey, you know, there's another option. Okay, you've tried all of these things. Why not give magic a try? Why not give mysticism a try? It's kind of like, you know, we have the medical profession, which I respect, and I've told a lot of people that wanted to go off on the deep end and say they just want to sit in the middle of the grass and eat dandelions instead of going to see if their ulcer could be taken care of. And, you know, I tell them, listen, if you have a doctor and that doctor is reputable and he tells you to follow an instruction, your best bet is to do exactly that. Okay?
Right.
Now, at the point where it does not work in her and nothing else works, then you've got to seek alternatives.
Right.
You know, so...
So for someone that, let's say, okay, someone takes your book and reads it, what would be the next step after they've read the book?
They would seek either practical methods of learning. They would go out and try those things that I've instructed them to try to see if it works for themselves. And that's probably the highest respect that I could be given. Just give it a shot.
Now, what are some of the things that So is the book something that, let's say I read the book, and is that something that I can work with on its own, or is it more of like a segue to more learning or to have to have you teach more? How does it work?
Well, you can work with it yourself, because remember, if they're my writings, it came straight from me, then it's like having me right there. Now, if you need instruction beyond that, then you can seek myself, or you can seek any teacher that really understands the nature of mysticism. You know, preferably, if you're going to try my method, the best thing to do is to contact me, and I'll be more than happy to instruct you. But for the most part, remember, magic is never limited. Mysticism isn't something that can be possessed. And I tell them, try other people. You know, try other things. See what you can come up with. If you're going to use my method, I'm the only one qualified to teach it.
Well, yeah, that would be evident, because you wouldn't, go to someone else that doesn't do that. Now, I have a question. What if, let's say, someone that is going to read your book or wants to read your book is very religious, and they feel that it's against their teachings or that there's something wrong with it? How would you clarify that to them?
I would tell them that I have always been, am, and will always be Christ-centered. And tell them that my biggest hero has always been Jesus and my role model. However, I don't believe that he walked around like a lily pad walking geisha boy. I thought he fought for people. I thought he helped people. I thought he got dirty with them. I thought he stood with them against demons. And I tell them exactly that. Besides, no one has the right to judge me except for God himself.
Right. So when we're talking about mysticism and magic, it's not something that you're telling me, it's not something that would go contrary to any of Jesus' teachings or of God's teachings. Is it something that would go hand in hand with what we're taught from the Bible?
Well, it would have to, wouldn't it? Think about it. We're talking about mysticism, which is part and parcel of divinity. And isn't that what God is? Divinity? Isn't that what Jesus is? Divinity? Doesn't Jesus offer us that same candle and torch? Tell us that if we believe in him, we believe in the Father. Tell us that we are children of God, God himself, and that he has given us many gifts, and it is our job to use them. Now, over the years, people have made all kinds of little adjustments, saying, well, if you, you know, beware of soothsayers. Well, you know what? Of course you are. You're supposed to be. That's common sense. And then most people don't even know what a soothsayer is. Well, a soothsayer is mainly a truth-sayer, you know, and that's all it is. Do you know that years and years ago and years and years and years, they used to call writing a letter casting a spell? And they called it that because you cast a spell, and, you know, you had to spell it. So it was simple, casting a spell. And then later on, because of some idea of some guy who really hated women, probably because they didn't like him, women became evil, you know. Then we got the different church regimes, which, truthfully, in my opinion, it helps people to find something positive to believe in their life. But the moment that you start cursing people, the moment you start hating people and hating people in the name of God, you are wrong. You are serving the other guy. And, you know, you hear it all the time. You know, it's just one of those things, and I address these things in the book, make it very simple. Listen, mysticism is open to all people of all walks of life. I can't really call myself religious, but I can call myself spiritual. And I know what that means. That means all inclusive. Remember, we are all one spirit. Whether we realize that or not, or become aware of that or not, is another whole thing. So when people go, well, you know, that's the devil's work, I say, prove it. And I just, prove it to me. Tell me where God said, what I do is the devil's work. When I do the things, when I do the things that Jesus does. Feed the hungry. Help clothe the poor. Help people to understand things. Pick them off of the floor and put them back on their feet and help them understand what faith really is. Tell me how that's evil. And then I look at them and say, tell me something else. You've got a giant cross around your neck. When did it ever say in the Bible that the cross was a symbol of Christ? Never.
True. And then there's other things, you know, like there's the placing of hands for healing and, you know, the oils and all that. So it's kind of like, it's funny to me because there's a lot of rituals in not just one religion, but in a lot of religions, if you look at them, that are very similar to what would be considered magic or spells, yet for some reason people accept that as though, well, that's fine, that's this right or that right, but for some reason when it comes to being
Well, they made people afraid of going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many people are afraid of going to hell? Nobody's afraid of death. You know what they're afraid of? What happens just before and what happens after.
Mm-hmm.
So you get these people who have been evil all their lives, and then when they get reached a certain age, all of a sudden they're good, trying to get in heaven. What that means basically is you've got people that have thrown away their service to the universe in order to please a God that they don't even understand. God never told us to get down on our knees, okay, to take up your cross, which basically means you get your body up off of the floor and do something. You can't do anything on your knees. Well, you can, but we don't want to talk about that. But, you know, you just have to get yourself up. Stop begging. If we are the children of God, why should we beg? Give me one good reason. I'm the child of God, the supreme being that rules all things, always has, always will, and always does. And I'm supposed to beg? And another thing, if there is God, there has to be goddess, right? A simple compromise.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it, these things, and you go, who are the people that actually made this crap up, and why do we listen to them?
So when someone reads your book and take what's in it to heart or practice it, what are some of the changes that they can expect to see in their life, or what are some of the benefits that would come out of it for them? Like if I wanted to recommend the book to somebody, what are some of the benefits that could come out of it if they're willing to put the work into it?
They would become a lot more positive and less fearful. They'd be able to make a decision for themselves. And they would see the proof there of things
mm-hmm.
actually working. I mean, they may not work the first time because you're new to it, but if you practice, they will work. And when they work, you'll find that you have an awesome obligation to help turn the tide, to help those people that cannot help themselves because you have
right.
some knowledge.
Now, you talked about the fact that once they read their book, if they wanted to learn more, they would go to you. So the way your school works, can you explain a little bit about how you take students and how it works? Do we physically have to go there, or are there other ways to be your student?
If you'd like to go there, you'd like to come here, then there are ways you can come here physically. But, excuse me, I have discovered that I enjoy teaching people online and private. I do group classes, but I love the classes online, such as Skype, or sometimes I'll even talk to a person by phone. But for the most part, if they really want to come here and be face-to-face with me, they
mm-hmm.
have to come, and I'll arrange something. I've taught a long time. If there are manual classes, such as music, art, dance, and forms of martial arts, they have to be here physically.
Mm-hmm.
And I read to them the riot act, the rules, and we begin.
Mm-hmm.
But, basically, there are a lot of people out there that profess to know how to do a lot of things. I can back it up any day, anytime.
So the classes you say you can teach online, what are the classes you can teach online? You said private classes.
Okay.
And how do people get involved in that?
Okay. That would be astrology, numerology,
mm-hmm.
telemetry, vibrational frequency, soul travel, soul regression or retrieval. Those are what we call divine sciences. They will help people to delve deep in themselves. I can teach them meditation, physically or online, and they would just call and set up an appointment for an interview. What I would do is I would decide whether or not they are serious, and then if I feel that they're serious, I will offer them a class schedule.
So when you talk about them being serious, what are some of the prerequisites for them to be able to learn with you?
Some of the main prerequisites are no drugs, no drinking. Now, those people that have a problem, I can help them. I'm more than perfectly willing to help them. But I don't accept people that have a drug problem and think it's okay. I'm sorry. You know, the only drugs I approve of are those that have been prescribed to you by a medical professional. Two, we stay out of trouble. Now, I don't care where a person has been and what they've done, but from the moment they meet me, they must stay out of trouble. That means they will follow the law. That means they will pay their taxes. That means they will find a way of financial means. That means that if they were with bad people before, I don't get to see them with those bad people. And believe me, I pop up all over the place. That means that their character has to be strengthened, or at least they have to be working on it. And they have to have the honest and sincere willingness to learn. The moment
and
I see that
once they now they become your students and they go through this, explain to us a little bit about what is the time frame that you're talking about and what are some of the benefits that they can see coming out of being your student?
It depends on what they choose. For instance, I do classes in six-week increments, and sometimes in six-month increments, and even a whole year, depending upon what it is that they want to study. Remember, I also teach paranormal investigation. I teach how to understand the difference between those things that could be deemed paranormal and those things that are normal. They have their right to choose whatever, and I deliver to them what I say I'll deliver to them. I tell them, though, and I always do this, this is just the way that I am. I do not run a democracy. In other words, I am the teacher. Okay? I say you do.
Right.
Bottom line. If they can deal with that, fine. If they can't deal with it, then they need to find someone who can just talk about feathers and stones and crystals. This is what I can say. The person that attends my classes will come out better than they were when they walked in.
So it goes beyond just magic and mysticism and astrology and all this other stuff. It's just about, can you explain a little bit in the last few minutes, is it something deeper, like getting into a connection? What exactly can people learn about themselves that makes them better people after having classes with you?
They can go face-to-face with their own weaknesses. Remember, we all have demons. You know, people like to go on ghost hunting trips and see if they can find a demon. But all you have to do is look in the mirror, and we'll deal with those demons step by step. And then if there's something that's blocking you from your own success, we will get you through it. And you'll have that experience. I always ask for this one promise. When I'm done teaching you, you'll go and help someone else. That is the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when people come in, they'll say, oh, this is really good. And I say, well, yeah, it is. And I've been called life coach, whatever you want to call them. That's fine. I don't care. Labels mean nothing to me. I'm a servant.
Mm-hmm.
I serve the universe. And the best thing that I can offer people, the absolute best thing, is common sense.
And that's a very valuable thing to have. I said that's an amazing, valuable thing to have, or to get in tune with, your common sense.
Exactly. Most people are just not aware of it. You know,
true.
We go on what we see. We go on what we watch on TV. We go on what our parents told us, even though they have a personal agenda. We go on, you know, other friends. We need to find ourselves, and that's what I do, is help people find themselves. I tell
them
I will drag you.
That's an amazing thing to be able to do.
Oh, well, it's not the easiest thing.
It's not. You know, I have to thank you for being on the show. For our listeners, we have Ahura Z. Deliza on our show. And as usual, whenever I have him on the show, the time just flies by. Uhura, is there anybody you'd like to say greetings to before you go?
Let's see. I'd like to say a greetings to all my friends in the independent film industry, those people that are working very, very hard to try to make something of themselves. I guess my wife, my students, my daughter, my colleagues, all those people in the mysticism world. And I'd like to say hi to all the skeptics and tell them, you can't beat me. I'm still here. And I'd also like to tell everyone that is serving right now in the military, keep your heads up. Hopefully we all exercise some common sense, and because I have a lot of students that are in the military. Keep your head up, stay strong, do what you know to do. And last but not least, I suppose, I have a lot of friends, but I can't just talk about them all. You know, this is all of my Facebook crew, you know, when I say my homies, which is a lot of kids. You people should be in bed by now. Anyway, and to you and your family.
Thanks.
I'd also like to say this one thing. If you all can help Charlie and her Sarah's Joy Foundation, it's a worthy foundation to invest in. And also, since we're doing a movie, Falkir, that Charlie is in, you know, help us with that too. Send us positive thoughts and money. Oh, and hi, Shelley. That's it.
Thank you so much, Uhura. It's always a pleasure having you. For our listeners, www.unicorn-cove.com is C's website. You can get all the information there. Also, you can give him a call, Unicorn Cove School of Metaphysics. They are over at 41 Ossipee Trail West, in Standish, Maine. You can go to the website and there'll be map and directions, or you can call them 207-347-5686. Again, 207-347-5686. If they do not pick up, because obviously it's a school and they're teaching, please leave a message and they will definitely get back to you. I think it was a pleasure having you. I look forward to having you again and to seeing your mugs pretty soon. Hopefully I can get out there in October, like I said I would. Thank you so much for your, and I know you're holding my book hostage. I've been telling Z for a while. I want a copy of your book.
Listen,
I have it.
You're going to have to come. No, you have to come get it. I am not sending anything in the mail. I told you that.
Yeah, they're like, mail it to me. He's like, no, you have to come and get it. So I have to go and get it to be able to read it because I've been dying to read this book. This is a work in process for a while that I've been looking forward to. So definitely is going to get me out there. So thank you so much, Zee. I am so glad that you were able to stop by. And again, remember, people, visit him at Unicorn Cove, the website. Also remember www.cyyrmovie.com. That's www.falkiermovie.
You can get the book from us at Unicorn Cove. You can order it through Amazon.
There you go. You can get it. Oh, I can get it through Amazon. No, wait, I can't because you promised you autographed mine, so I can't be sneaky and get one through Amazon.
Early.
I would not doubt it. That was my credit card would get declined if I try to get one. So thank you so much, Zee. I'm so grateful that
you
were on the show. As always, honored. And have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, man, I'm telling you, these guests I have are just amazing. So for you guys, remember, Unicorn Cove, definitely go down there. You can get the book through Amazon as well, The Way of the Unicorn by Uhura Zee. And it'll enlighten your mind and definitely teach you that, hey, there's more that you can do to help yourself break through the barriers. And I'm so grateful that he was here with us. And, of course, Jay Walker, the amazing artist that he is. So with that said, we will be leaving in less than a minute. Thank you so much again, guys, for making time out of your busy week to spend a couple of hours with me. I'm deeply honored and humbled that you would do that. Sarah's Joy Foundation, which Azura Uhura Zee mentioned, please, we have our road race coming up on the 15th. We're doing a fundraiser, so do visit our website, sarahsjoyfoundation.org and stop by, and anything you can give, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. And again, do not let anyone ever steal your dreams away. Have a good night, have a great week, and we hope to see you again real soon. And with that, we leave you with Can You See by Miss Crispin. Have a blessed
day. Get in my eyes, can you see a light that shines when you look through me? The light in my life, you hold the key for me, baby. Pretend to be preoccupied. I can see you catch my eye. Afraid to take the only risk. Try it once now, kiss my lips. You know you want to, don't hold back. Baby, be brave, relax and look into my eyes. Can you see when the feeling comes, you gotta look to me. Chase, well.